Well, I have a booming voice, so let me get started as we're waiting for some of these AV things to be worked out. My name is Jim Harms, and I'm happy to welcome you on behalf of the MFA program in the Department of English. This is one of the most important events of the year for those of us in the creative writing program, the graduating class for 2009, our MFA students for this year. Matt Buchanan, Sarah Beth Childers, Laura D'Angelo, Rachel Rosalina, John Shumay, and Aaron Beat have all fulfilled the requirements of our very rigorous three-year program, a program that emphasizes academic preparation in addition to creative writing workshops. They've all written book-length theses of fiction, nonfiction, or poetry, and they've all had the very pleasurable experience of defending those theses before a committee of rapidly supportive MFA faculty. And all six of these soon-to-be former students have managed to fulfill these demanding requirements while either teaching two courses a semester in the Department of English or working day in and out for the WVU Press. As any of us on the faculty would be happy to tell you, these are fabulous individuals who have all made us grateful that we're professors, that we're lucky enough to be able to spend serious time with such serious, ambitious, and talented writers. And it's a happy occasion this evening, even if the happiness is tempered by the fact that we're saying goodbye to a group that has made our jobs a pleasure. So we're here tonight to wish these writers well and to celebrate their accomplishments in that singular way available to lovers of the literary arts by listening to their work out loud. So I want to tell you how things are going to proceed tonight, since it can get chaotic at one of these events. Not least of which is because writers are involved. But after introducing all six of them generally as a group, I'll call forward each of them individually to read. And after each graduate has read, his or her thesis director, or me standing in for his or her thesis director, will come up to hood the newly minted MFA. Now, this sounds vaguely violent, but as you'll see, it's actually an act of ceremony, and it's worth photographing. So, if any of you would like a picture of your favorite graduate being hooded, feel free to scamper up here and snap away. In other words, don't wait until the end, you know, abandon all niceties. If your beloved is up here getting hooded, just come on up and snap some pictures. Now, when all six graduates have finished reading, and I'll be calling them, as I said, I'll be calling them up individually to read. Then we'll invite them back en masse, and we can take some group pictures and applaud them one last time for their accomplishments.
So now I don't have to yell and
have a sip. All right, I won't rehash. Let me tell you a little bit about each of our six readers. Aaron B. is from Rock Cave, West Virginia, and she earned her BA in English writing at nearby West Virginia Wesleyan College. She's a fan of the poets Susan Howe and Jean Valentine, and when she's not reading poetry, she's usually buying up books
of lists, like McSweeney Book of Lists. In her free time, which I'm sure consisted of a few minutes here and there on alternate weekends, she enjoys watching hockey, learning how to bake, and biking on the river trail. John Shumate is from Central Ohio and a graduate of Ohio State University. I was so pleased that he didn't put the in front of Ohio State University. He mentioned to me that he currently spends most of his time thinking about writing fiction and playing World of Warcraft. But we all know just how hardworking and generous John is. To say that John is our resident expert on zombie literature would diminish the extent and sophistication of his experience and devotion, and, I must say, to underestimate the distance between zombie lit and Donald Barthelme, another important influence on his work. He'll also be teaching our online course in creative writing this coming summer. Rachel Rosalina is originally from East Tennessee. She's been published in both Slab and The Broken Plate, and has spent the last 2 years as the editorial and production assistant for the WVU Press, which is why no one sees her very often. Regardless, she reports that she had an amazing 3 years and is grateful to everyone who has helped her along the way. Now, in addition to her writing, her studies, and her teaching, Lori D'Angelo has worked tirelessly this year on behalf of CAL, which is the Council of Writers, our MFA student organization, and as the assistant to the Creative Writing Program. She's done a terrific job in both positions. She would like to dedicate this reading to her husband, Jamie, and her dog, Maggie. Maggie was unfortunately unable to attend tonight's reading due to discriminatory regulations against Sarah Beth Childers cites The Little House on the Prairie books as her earliest nonfiction influence, having read that series at the age of six, which is before I read them, so I was just a little jealous about that. It was then she realized it could be interesting to write about real everyday life, though she worried that her memory for exact conversations and calico prints would never be as good as Laurie Ingalls Wilder's. Her work has appeared in Paddlefish and SN Review, and her short story, Red Ribbon, was nominated for a Pushcart Prize. Next year, she'll be learning to drive in the snow in Hamilton, New York, where she'll hold the Olive B. O'Connor Fellowship at Colgate University. Matt Buchanan is from Indianapolis, Indiana. His poems have appeared in several literary journals, including Bat City Review, Phoebe, Smartish Pace, and Versal. He carries on in the tradition of other poets in love with America's strange beauty, writers like James Tate, Russell Levinson, and Dean Young, among others. Matt is also our first reader tonight, so please welcome Matt Buchanan.
Thank you, Jim, for this wonderful introduction. Can everybody hear me? This is very strange. So I just want to start off by saying that I feel very lucky and very honored to have been part of this program and the English department. I've worked with lots of wonderful people, and I've had a great time while I was here. A big thank you to my thesis committee, Jim Harms, Marianne Salmon, and John Lamb. And thank you to my friends and family for all their support. My parents are here tonight. They just got in a couple hours ago, so thank you for making the drive out from Indiana. And finally, most of all, thank you, Emily Watson. I owe everything to you. So, okay, I'm going to read some poems. This first poem is called Yes, Joshua, Things Are Good. Of course, I'm nutso-gutso about love. And yes, the sea is a wonderful contraption. All those boats automatically floating to their destinations. I mean, can you imagine if my days at the slaughterhouse were over and no more nights at the bar? I guess I could do without some scuzzy dude always giving me the hairy eyeball. I could stay home and settle for watching old episodes of Deal or No Deal. Not that I've ever asked the big questions. So why start now? Just lie back and think of America. I'm nothing more than a background torn from its stage, a pale field where my brother carries our dead dog under a sky of good-looking clouds, just staying put. Even on this patio next to the fake lake, I can't help but imagine my imaginary herd. Hares and deer and sheep and bees. Always bees. I'm feeling comfortable in this new role in which I seek to immediately invent the experiences I've already had. I'm going back inside to bury my hand in a pile of candy hearts in their heart-shaped bowl. This next poem is a prose poem and it's called Choose Your Baby. There's a baby with a tattoo of a doorknob on its belly. There's a baby with a tattoo of a trilobite on its foot. There's a baby with a tattoo of a wristwatch on its wrist. There's a baby with a tattoo of the baby with a tattoo of a doorknob on its belly on its back. There's a baby tattooed from head to toe with the first four chapters of Moby Dick. There's a baby that's not even a baby. He just looks like a baby. A baby who's programmed to stumble around your neighborhood, affixing UPC codes onto all the trees and dogs and cats and other living things while humming the great gig in the sky. Every midnight, he'll play a ding-dong ditch. Eventually, a sleepless neighbor with a baby of his own will shoot your baby in the face. This will be much sadder than you could have ever imagined. Your wife will acquire a series of exotic pets to try to fill the void. Your son will lose interest in his action figures and internet porn. Things will never be the same. Just sit in your bathtub and try to fall asleep. This is a short poem called Love as a Series of Continuity Errors. Your scarf disappeared and reappeared while I talked of the future like it already hadn't happened. You reached for a fork that was a knife. Somehow the clocks stayed in place and we got to repeat our view from the spinning restaurant atop the hotel. Then my haircut changed and we were touching for the first time in your room. In the window over your shoulder, a different city. Here's another prose poem that's also a persona poem, and I feel very silly taking on this voice, but here it goes. It's called Scuzzoid Kid in a Tree. Once I believed I could karate chop the sky out of the sky, but I settled for complicating the clouds with an insistence on shape-shaped things. Earlier today, I yelled, "You smoke weed," at some dude walking along the high street bridge while leaning out the passenger side of Daryl's truck, wind all tangled in my Civil War sideburns. Then I was at the nearest strip mall, thinking of getting a self-destructive haircut. But I resisted. I decided to eat some acid and climb this tree. The birds left immediately. Now I've got their view, and things aren't so simple. You know when that masked guy gives away the magician's secrets on TV? Well, I don't want to know, but I can't help but watch. Damn it, I'm into being bamboozled, which seems to be happening less and less now. This world is too full. I told my dad that. I've got 10 fingers and 10 toes, but I guess the thumbs are most important. At some point, things got serious. Some static cleared. My girlfriend is going to be so cool about my broken arm. She'll buy colored markers and all the beer. Daryl and the guys will be freaked when they have to drive me to the emergency room. But it's all worth it. I want to see what happens when I hit the ground. The grass is right there. Okay, this is my last poem, and it's called The Doctor's Drawn a Mouth on His Surgical Mask. Later, I'm found on the roadside, somewhere outside Gary, Indiana, possibly Calumet Township. A bull snake curled at the bottom of a rusted steel barrel, burning leaves in the distance. Then, lots and lots of sleep. Then, finally, self-portrait with MD-11s. Sun rising over the frozen tarmac, jet fuel and wind tangled in my hair. Thanks.